you know, how we scale effectively, because it's very different when you're a scrappy startup with 4 or 5 designers to when you're a design team of 35. And actually, you know, the way you work needs to change, the way you structure the team needs to change. And yeah, I mean, I guess it has evolved a lot over the last few years.
Hello and welcome to This Is HCD. Our goal is to have conversations that inspire and help move the dial forward for organizations to become more human-centered in their approach to solving complex business and societal problems. My name is Jerry Scullion, and I'm the founder of This Is HCD. And if you like what we do at This Is HCD and want to help us, there's a few things you can do to get started. Number one, you can leave a review wherever you're listening to this podcast right at this moment. It only takes a couple of minutes, but it's one of the most important things you can do and help others find the podcast as too, and every little helps. Number two, you can become a patron. You can get an ad-free stream of the podcast for as little as €1.66 per month, and also get a shout out as a thanks on the podcast too. Now, there are other plans there if you want to really show your support, such as get a hoodie and get a t-shirt as well with an embroidered Design for Humans logo. All the money goes directly to editing, hosting and maintaining our website, which is now a repository for human-centered design goodness with over 220 episodes. Now, in this episode, I chat with one of the leaders in the content design space, Rachel McConnell. We chat about the work that they're doing at Flow Healthcare and touch on some of the work that they did whilst at Deliveroo. We chat about the learnings at Flow, where the organization is going through another iteration on how to connect the dots between product design, content design, and more. Rachel now finds herself in such an exciting position as design director with Flow that allows her to apply much of the knowledge within their second book titled Leading Content Design, published by the wonderful people at A Book Apart. We chat about the work that Rachel is doing also with Lead with Tempo, the conference that Rachel co-founded. Rachel was such a wonderful guest. We had such fun making this episode, and I hope you enjoy it too. Let's jump in. Rachel, great to have you in the show. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Yeah, not bad at all.
Whereabouts in the UK are you?
I am just outside Brighton. I'm sort of in a village that no one's ever heard of, called Cowfold, which is about 20 minutes outside Brighton.
Nice. Nice. Good part of the world. What's the weather like over there today?
It's actually quite nice today. It's quite sunny. It's quite mild, a bit windy. To be honest, I haven't been outside all day, which is really sad. My office is at the bottom of my garden, so I walk about 6 steps to my office and then 6 steps back to the house. My step count is pretty low sometimes.
Sometimes I have to check the pulse to make sure you're alive.
Yeah.
But look, you know, we're going to be chatting today. You're now design director for Flow Health, a pretty cool product we've just been discussing beforehand, that really focuses on the biometrics, is it, and the metrics for the what does it say here, the better a better future for female health by helping our users harness the power of their body signals. So
yeah, I think that's a really long-winded way of saying it helps people understand their hormones.
pretty much. So you've recently promoted to design director.
Yes, that's
and
right.
What does the role now entail?
Well, it's interesting. So I'm pretty much starting from scratch in terms of the design team, because until I came into this role 6 months ago, all of our product designers and researchers reported directly into product VPs, and there was just a completely flat structure. So I think when I started in my new role, I had something crazy like 22 direct reports.
Nice.
So I've hired a head of research who's just started and taken on the research team, and I'm hiring other roles. So I'm creating structure and hierarchy for the team, and, you know, putting together the basics, I guess, from role expectations through to hiring someone to build out our design system. So we really are kind of starting from nothing in terms of building that design culture at Flow, which is exciting, but also, you know, quite challenging given the environment.
Flow isn't a new business. It's been around, well, I'm going to guess here, about 8 years, is it? Something around there?
Yes, seven, eight years. Yep.
So it's interesting that they're probably going through their second or third iteration of how they design and how they create things. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. And it's about understanding, you know, how we scale effectively, because it's very different when you're a scrappy startup with four or five designers to when you're a design team of 35. And actually, you know, things, the way you work needs to change, the way you structure the team needs to change. And yeah, I mean, I guess it has evolved a lot over the last few years. I mean, even our research team, a year ago, we had one researcher, and now we've got a team of nine. So, right, you know, it's come on a very long way in a very short space of time. But in the history of the company, you know, the team we have now in terms of kind of user-centered disciplines like content design, for example, have only existed in the organization for the last year. So, yeah, it's about establishing new ways of working. It's about building relations and, I guess, taking the company on a bit of a journey around what is design thinking and, you know, why it's even important to have researchers or content designers.
Yeah, I mean, you yourself, it's interesting, like you talk about the evolution of the organization when it's only been 4 or 5 years ago that you released your first book. And help me out with the title, is Why You Need a Content Design
Team. Why You Need a Content Team and How to Build One.
Very, very pragmatic guide on how to implement that into the design, kind of the typical design structure. I'm doing air quotes here. And then your second book is leading the content design function within that team. So you can see that it was almost like education about what content design is, and selling it in, and then the second thing is leading it. So you're pretty well placed to have this conversation today about how to build a design team, but also to introduce those kind of functions that typically some organizations may not have had. Where does content design currently with Flow?
So we have content design sits in my team, so we sit sort of side by side with product design. We're not quite at an equal ratio, so I think we have maybe one content designer to every two product designers, which isn't a bad ratio actually. And we actually try to co-design and start, you know, right from the start of an initiative, we'll make sure that the content designers and product designers are in the same session, so they've got the same context. We've just started to use things like project canvases to get the team aligned. And then in terms of moving into like concept development and ideation, it's quite interchangeable who could run those sessions. For example, you know, we have content designers who might run some content-led ideation or conversational design approaches. Equally, they might be able to run, you know, sketching sessions with the team. So we sort of embrace the blur, I guess, a little bit between the disciplines. And at times, you know, they will kind of converge and diverge and do the things that are specialist.
So you've got a ratio of 1 to 2 or 2 to 1, depending on how you're looking at it. Do you hire user experience designers? Is that term already kind of outdated then?
So we have product designers. In an ideal world, the product designer would be, you know, 50% UX, 50% UI. I guess it's natural that most designers lean towards one end of the spectrum or have a preference in how they spend a lot of their time. And, you know, I've definitely found that through, I've been interviewing for a lot of roles over the last couple of months. I've probably had hundreds of interviews. And people do naturally have a leaning, and I think it's genuinely quite difficult to find someone who can, you know, flex between and is happy to flex between both equally well. So what is really helpful with when you have a content designer is a lot of content designers are from that UX background and are familiar with UX methodology and techniques. So actually, when you pair them up with someone who might be more on the kind of UI side, it's quite a good combination. They actually tend to work quite well together, and actually, you know, I think that's where the beauty of collaboration and multidisciplined teams comes in, because you've got people who have all these like different skills, but actually when they come together and sort of blend those skills, it doesn't really matter who's, you know, who's driving it, as long as you're kind of getting the outcomes that you need. It shouldn't really matter who's driving those different stages of the process.
It does feel that the UX designer role, though, has kind of become less and less commonplace, I think, in some of the organizations that I've spoken to recently. And product design seems to be replacing that term, that definition. Is that the same what you see, or how do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess my view is that we're all essentially UX designers. We're all designing the experience. Yeah. We're all designing the user experience, whether we're, you know, whether we're titled as a product designer or UI designer or a content designer, whatever our titles are. Mm-hmm. We're all doing UX. And I think those methodologies translate into the roles. And I've worked with a lot of UX designers in the past. And actually, when I was first a content designer, the first few years, I was working really, really closely with UX designers and picked up a lot of techniques and skills that, you know, I still use to this day. So I definitely think there is still a need for that UX thinking and those practices and those methods. And, you know, even in some cases, I would say if you're working on a big strategic initiative where actually you need to do a lot of upfront thinking before you even get into sort of design work, then actually UX design becomes much more important than, you know, if you're just kind of putting together a quick experiment, a quick low risk experiment to kind of put out the door, you know. So I think it depends on the type of project and the type of organization. I think there's a role for it, but I do think that where you're in a very fast paced environment, where you need to get things out quickly, actually sometimes you just need people who have a bit of UX thinking, but are actually more sort of delivery focused in terms of prototyping and high fidelity design. So yeah, I do think there's a role for it, but I think it depends on where you are and the nature of the work.
Yeah, and absolutely. So content design, I mean, whenever Sarah Winters wrote content design book, I think it might have been 2016, somewhere around the 2017, I don't know, it all gets a bit blurry over the last 6 or 7 years. I remember reading that book at that time and kind of going, yeah, this makes sense. UX is you know, missing this critical element. Where were you in those years as well? Like, and what role were you playing? Have you always been in the content side of design?
Yeah, I was actually, at the time the book came out, I was in my first content design role and building a team. And actually, I can't even remember if I was called a content designer, but I was essentially in a digital team who, in a big, large organization that were going through a lot of transformation and were creating new web journeys, actually insurance journeys. Mm-hmm. And I was, at the time, creating content for their kind of blog website, really, writing articles and managing social media accounts and that kind of thing. And I noticed that the designers and the at the time UX designers and UI designers were, and actually developers and product managers, were creating all these online forms and data capture journeys without any content experts. And I sort of said, well, why are you writing the content around these things? This is the work of a content expert. You know, you need to write with clarity. You need to write simply. You need to understand how to communicate a really tricky concept in a word. And that isn't something that just anyone can do. You know, it actually takes a longer time to write short copy than it does to write long copy. You know, it's actually really, really difficult. Sometimes you think one word's easy. It's actually often the hardest things to write. So I kind of volunteered to support that and help. And then before I knew it, I was across 6 product teams working on 6 different initiatives, which obviously wasn't sustainable. So I started to build a team. And it was kind of around that time that book came out. And it actually was quite helpful because I was hiring content designers and I could be like, okay, well now, you know, this is a valid term. This is what content design is. This is why it's important. And actually that led me to write my book because it was almost like the follow-up of what are the different content roles? How is a content strategist different from a content designer? How is a UX writer different from a content designer? We have all these terms. What does it mean? If I'm running a design team, what do I need to hire for? How should I structure that team? You know, and it's all these questions that I wish I'd sort of almost had that book at the time and could have handed to my then design director and said, this is why you need the team. This is how we should structure it. And this is how we should hire for these roles.
And that's the book, Why You Need a Content Design Team and How to Build One. I mean, like, it rolls off the tongue.
it does what it says on the tin.
It is exactly what it says on the tin. And I mean, you just answered your own question there really by creating it for yourself, and you wish you had it. And that in itself sure was very helpful to a lot of people. I think most people get what content design is. And I remember at the time when I saw it, it felt like it sort of covered over the gaps in the user experience design toolkit, I guess, if you want, the bits where I'm like, oh, I've been writing content and I know. So it's great to work with content designers. And I've been lucky enough to work alongside some really good content designers in my career. So that book will definitely be very helpful. But I'm interested to see about the evolution of content design and the second book that you wrote about leading content design. So my question to you is, if you're leading content design, how is that different to leading design?
I think there's some unique challenges that content designers face. And there are some similar challenges, you know, like advocating for our roles and the value we bring to the organization and, you know, proving that value. But I think there's some really unique challenges in content because content itself is a bit of a broad term. And there's nuances between different content roles. And I think it can be very hard to help organizations understand those nuances, but then also know how to work with them. And so the difficulty a lot of content designers face, and it's something you sort of mentioned yourself, is that, you know, many organizations, the designers are putting the content in.
Yeah.
They don't probably really want to be because it's not their specialism, but they don't have anyone else to do it. Mm. And actually sometimes UX designers actually do want to write the content. And there's this level of control as well that, you know, designers have when they're working with a product manager, they can be completely accountable for the design process and the output and the outcomes even. And then when they start start collaborating with them, it's very, very hard to kind of break into that because they're not used to it. They don't know when to work with you, when to involve you, when not to involve you. So the biggest challenge that a lot of content designers face is they're put into an organization or they're hired into an organization that historically hasn't really had content designers. Yeah. They don't know how to work with them. And they have designers who are quite kind of reticent and reluctant to give up, you know, the keys to the designs. Yeah. You know, they don't want to share, they don't want to give people editing rights in Figma, and they don't want to ideate together. And it's these sorts of challenges which really, really, really are really hard to overcome. And I think the other thing that is interesting with content design is it bridges the gap between a lot of places in the organization and the product. So content crosses into brand, it crosses into marketing, it crosses into call centers. All of the things we look at from a service design perspective, all kind of hangs together through content. You know, do we tell our users the same thing online as we do in our call center script? Are there breakpoints of content across the organization? And the content designer is in a role where, you know, they have to work with product, legal, localization teams, marketing teams, and kind of they're almost like the linchpin in a sense of everything else that's going on in the organization from a content point of view, and then what our users end up seeing. So there's complexities around working with other parts of the organization. There's complexities of working with stakeholders and going through, you know, sign-off processes on content, which can be quite complex and challenging. And often when you're responsible for that content, these are things that you almost need like a framework for to do it efficiently and effectively. Otherwise, you're just kind of coming up against the same blockers all the time.
Which is a fantastic segue, folks, into the next section. That framework that you're talking about, okay, was a question that I had for you. Like, so, you know, we've got the double diamond, okay, and I hate calling that out in this show because most people would be like rolling their eyes, the double diamond. The triple diamond, there's lots of different frameworks. And when you were talking there, the question around research, okay, and the level of different Zoom levels that you're researching at are going to derive different insights based on the language that's used versus the usability of a product versus like wayfinding, whatever Zoom level you're going to look at. How have you found the introduction of content design into the processes? And how has that reshaped the research process?
Actually, I found the biggest allies to content design are often researchers because we have skills that can really help them in their process. And actually, I remember when I was at Deliveroo and I used to work really closely with the researcher. I used to help write the test scripts. I used to, you know, help prepare our interview materials. We used to co-facilitate guerrilla research with our riders. I was working on the rider app at the time.
Can I just and then actually there for help one second. When you're writing those scripts, and I didn't mean to be so blatant, you wouldn't stop you there. But what kind of questions is a content design lead really looking to distill and get into?
How do people describe things? What's the language they use? What's their level of comprehension? Mm-hmm. Are they understanding what we're telling them in the product? How are they interpreting the information? And I think like that's often you know, something that we might pick up through user testing, for example, when we're observing like behavior and we're observing how people interact with the content. We might pick up on, oh, they didn't understand it. But actually, when you've got a content expert in the room, they can say, okay, I've got a hypothesis around how we could make this easy to understand. You can actually even, you know, if you've had three or four participants who've all got stuck on the same thing, change it for the next one and see if it helped. You know, you can do it there and then.
Absolutely.
You can see really quick improvements. I think even like from concept development though, or testing like early concepts, just getting that proposition right, just getting that value proposition right for a concept makes all the difference between whether people will respond positively or negatively to it. And, you know, content designers can really help with that because they're experts in shaping the content around the outcomes that the user's trying to achieve. So even at early kind of concept test stage, I think you can get a lot of value from getting your content designs. And product naming, that is a huge one where content design skills are often overlooked. And what will happen is the organization will decide to name a feature or product. And they're like, oh, it's just internal. It's not going to go, you know, it's not going to go out to users. And then before you know it, the name is just stuck. And then they're launching this feature with a god-awful abstract name that no one understands. It's like, get your content designers involved. That's what they're there for.
I know. It's interesting because I don't know where it's come from, but some teams that I've coached believe that the researchers look after the research piece, okay, and they inherit the findings, and they take those findings and they kind of like move with it forward downstream, if you want. But whenever I'm teaching any of the design research stuff, the co-creation of a research proposal with as many people involved as possible to really define the research question is one of the most valuable things you can do, because it avoids you from getting into a bottleneck further downstream where they're like, well, I didn't sign off on that. So by using that approach and having content designers involved at the content research proposal, stage, is one way to really avoid that, I guess. Is that something you see?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, we used to get the whole team involved in defining research objectives, like what are the things we were all trying to find out? And then you can understand, okay, what's what what are the key things that this team needs to know about the users before we can proceed? And sure, some of it will be, you know, product based, some of it will be about content, some of it might be about behavior. And I think, like, if you're all aligned on the priorities when you create that research brief, it does really help. It also helps just engage everyone. I mean, we used to take our engineers along to research sessions at Deliveroo, and they were the most user-centric engineers I've ever worked with, because they were part of that process and they were invested in how our users were interacting with the app. And I've never seen that anywhere else. So just that level of dedication from every single discipline into getting closer to users and understanding user needs.
Yeah. Deliveroo is probably a really interesting case study, I'm sure, for content design, because as I mentioned to you before, and I'm writing a module in a course that I'm writing at the moment, and the time sensitivity, tell me if I'm wrong here now, because I do a disclaimer in my course that I'm like, I'm not going to work for Deliveroo, but the time sensitivity when you open up your Deliveroo app, you're getting in the way of one of the biggest blockers in my brain, and that is hunger. Hunger gets in the way. I'm like, if anything is to interrupt that flow, I'm most likely going to throw the phone against the wall. So yeah. Was that one of your findings as well? Like, it's a really sensitive kind of process that you need to be aware of.
Yeah, it's also really time sensitive from a rider point of view, because they want to do as many deliveries in an hour as they can, because that's where the money is, right? So any tiny thing that uses, you know, seconds of their time contributes to a slower delivery and less deliveries an hour. So time was definitely a huge issue for both riders, customers and restaurants, because obviously the food needs to be picked up at a particular time, because if it sits there and gets cold, then customers aren't happy. Yeah, but then you don't want someone there early. You don't want your riders kind of hanging around, clogging up the restaurant. So from kind of all three user perspectives, time was definitely a huge factor in everything we did.
I'm not saying it was me, but somebody told me that McDonald's, were automatically triggering whenever the order went through. They were automatically triggering to the driver that the food was ready, and as a result, the riders were sitting outside waiting. they were trying to make sure that the food was going to get there hot, but in the end, it came back and bit them on the bum. I don't know if you have any experience in sort of ensuring that the sincerity of the trigger to call the rider is of importance, because it's a really, from a service design perspective, it's orchestration at its very best.
Yeah, the logistics behind it are crazy. I do remember, like, one of the things that we had to try and combat was actually riders being too early at the restaurant, because if they're too early, they're just hanging around. Yeah. And actually, if they also check in and say that they're there but they're not there because they want the food to be ready, then that upsets the restaurants, because then they get the food ready and the rider's not there. So a three-sided product is really interesting to work on, because you've just got all of those different conflicting priorities.
Yeah. And I mean, I mentioned there, like, that I get hungry, but I also get very hangry. And whenever I'm watching that little figure on the map getting closer to my house, I am the person who's standing at the end of my path, my drive, and I notice in the last 6 months, there's this emergence of a pattern where the rider obviously has an option to say, I'm outside, can you come and meet me? When in effect they're probably about 200 or 300 meters away. So there's always work to be done, I'm sure, in that balancing of the three different stakeholders working congruently at the same time.
Yeah, and I think the same is for any product. Your users are always going to find a way to play the system, whatever you do.
Absolutely. Like, you know, so the book Leading Content Design, it's on a book apart, probably maybe one of my favorite publishers, I'd say. You know, they've produced a sensational array of incredible books over the years. If you were to talk to somebody at a dinner party, Rachel, and I can already sense you're going, oh, what's he going to ask next? What's the key takeaways in those books, in the leading content design book? What are the three things that someone's going to walk away and say, you buy this book, you get these things?
I think, like, basically just having the confidence to create the right conditions for their team to do their best work. Yeah. Giving someone who might be new to leading a content team, like, even if they're not, you know, they might not be from a content background, they might be a designer who suddenly found themselves leading content design. But understanding the common blockers and barriers for a content team, and having the confidence to kind of resolve them, really, and help the team work more effectively and efficiently. So that would be the first one. Mm. I'd say also, if you've got a new team, or even an old team not full of old people, but like like me, but like a team that's, you know, been around for a while and hasn't necessarily scaled with common practice, you know, good foundations and common practices, it will also help someone create common practices for the team, and, you know, repeatable frameworks that the team can use as they scale. And then another thing which is really key, and I think this is something that, again, transcends content design into sort of any discipline, but how to advocate for your discipline within an organization. I think this is not necessarily in tech companies, but I've worked in a lot of, you know, big old organizations where you sort of have a digital team and you're trying to transform an organization, but the organization has never been taught about these disciplines or even design thinking. And so a lot of the time you're sort of trying to take people on that journey with you and show them a different way of working and help them appreciate how you can help them have more impact in their role, or help the company have more impact. So it also has a lot of things around building advocacy and communities of practice, which helps people, again, sort of keep those different content roles in an organization connected.
Awesome. Well, Rachel, is there anything else you wanted to give a shout out to on the podcast? Like, maybe are you hiring at the moment, or are you're like, yes, I am.
I'd love to give a shout out to a community that I run in addition to my day job. I run a community called Tempo for people that lead content teams, or people that are aspiring to move into leadership roles in content. And we have a conference in New York in March. We've got some really amazing speakers from content leadership, but also just from general design leadership. So if anyone would like to join our community or find out more about the conference, if you go to leadwithtempo.com, you can find out everything you need to know there.
That's awesome. I've just joined that as well, and I'll throw a link to that into the show notes. That sounds like a really worthwhile piece. Do you have to be a content designer to join, or can you be someone who's on the periphery?
Yeah, no, absolutely not. So I think it's for anyone who, you know, you might be aspiring to lead content teams, or you might be leading a content team, but from a non-content background. We're kind of pretty inclusive.
All right, nice. Well, I'll throw a link to that in the show notes. And also, maybe will I put a link to your LinkedIn if anyone wants to follow up to you and ask questions and stay in touch?
Yeah, please do. That would be great.
All right, Rachel, listen, thank you so much for giving me your energy, your positivity, your general openness to answering some crazy ass questions. So thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
There you go, folks. I hope you enjoyed that episode. And if you enjoyed it and want to listen to more, why not visit thisishcd.com, where you can learn more about what we're up to and also explore our courses whilst you're there. Thanks again for listening.